On tonight's Bumper Agenda Election Special, the old guard links government's communication policy with the loss of four ministerial seats during last week's election and the qualities needed for the next Chief Minister. Later in the programme, two of the newest voices in Manx politics talk transparency, connecting with the people and the remarkable shift in women's representation in the new House of Keys. So, sit down, put your feet up and make yourself comfortable. I caught up with former Chief Ministers Alan Bell and Tony Brown just after the general election. This is what they had to say. Tony, did you get any sleep last night?
Just about by the time I got home, which was about 2:40, and I was up again at 8, so...
And Alan, did you know there was an election on yesterday?
Yeah, I sat up to the bitter end to see Ramsay's results, because it was so late coming through last night. But yeah, I couldn't go to bed and miss that, which was quite an interesting outcome.
The election result, it was quite an amazing result, really.
Well, I think, yes, it was an impressive result in terms of the amount of women who've been elected, and I think that's great. I'm not a great one for saying somebody's good because you're a woman or a man. You're either good at it or you're not, and I think that will tell. But I think the greatest thing it shows is opportunities are opening up for women to have the freedom to do things that really only men have been able to do quite easily, apart from a few women. So I think that's great. Be interested to see how they develop and how it goes on. You've got two former MLCs who are going into the Keys as MHKs, who've had about 18 months of experience, or 2 years, I'm not sure the amount of time, and that will really help them when they're in there, because at least they have that experience. So I think that's very good. I think the issue of the government and the amount of ministers, you could have be forgiven for thinking they should have done very well because of the handling of the COVID issue on the Isle of Man.
And of course, that pandemic was the case. The UK obviously had their elections to local government elections they had. All the sitting parties, the governing parties, did extraordinarily well. The Conservatives did well in England, and the Scottish National Party in Scotland, Labour in Wales. So you would have expected that COVID bounce. But Alan, I mean, what were your thinking?
Well, on the two points, really. First of all, I think it's a very good outcome in terms of getting more women in. It's something that we both know has been discussed ad nauseum over the years, how to get a higher representation of women. And the really nice thing, I think, about last night is that they've all gone in on their own merits.
Absolutely.
As you know, there have been discussions in the past that we should be a quota for women and all sorts of fanciful ideas like that. But this is something that the public has spoken. They've identified the women that they want to come in and represent them. They're all strong women, I think, who will make a positive contribution over the next 5 years. So I think that's a really good outcome, and it shows that the fallacy, really, of trying to pursue this quota idea. People should only be elected to the Keys on their own merits, on the abilities that they have to enhance the Isle of Man's performance in a whole raft of areas.
Yeah.
As far as the bad night for the government is concerned, I agree with both of you. I think it's a disastrous night for the government. Four ministers going. The Chief Minister himself has stepped out of politics now and retired. So that's more than half the council ministers that have lost their seats. I think nearly all the other ministers have lost votes heavily. In Ramsay, for example, Dr. Allinson's vote virtually halved, I think, since the last election. A disastrous result for him. But I think a lot of it is down to had the election taken place round about the time of the first lockdown, I think there would be a well of support for the ministers and for government policy from the island right across the board. I think some of the steps, though, that have been taken subsequent to that have been problematic, shall we say, to say the very least, and have not gone down well with the public. And in fact, I know certainly many of the people I talked to have been very angry about the way the situation's been handled over the last few months. And I think there's a kickback on that. I think also, though, that the government itself has to accept a big proportion of the blame because of their communications policy over this period. When we've all been in office, we've had quite a robust communications process. We had a good interplay with the media generally, with the wider public.
And that, the robust word basically is actually, we all, when asked, we went on the radio.
Absolutely. We were there accessible 24 hours a day virtually. And it gave ministers the opportunity to explain difficult decisions to the public through the media. Since this new government has come in, all that interplay between the media and government more or less came to a halt. It's now channeled in a very, very restrictive way through the communications department, which really prevents government or government ministers from explaining the nuances of some of the policy decisions they're having to take. And the public have reacted badly, I think, as much for the lack of knowledge as actually the actions that they've taken.
Yeah, interestingly, 4 months ago, when I was first approached by Manx Radio to see would I help out with their election coverage, I thought, oh, actually, my perception is that come election time, there's going to be an awful lot of quite wacky ideas about how government works, because people seem to have become quite disconnected from government. So I wonder whether we could give sessions on the show to chief executives to come on and explain how their departments work. The response I got back after 3 months of asking, I got positive responses, I should say, from the chief minister. But eventually, one of his media minders came back to me to say, we've decided that this would be interference in the election process. Well, I wonder what the ministers who've lost their seats will be thinking now about the lack of interference, the lack of explanation about how government actually works, because some of the stuff that I heard at some of these the Manx Radio election meetings was quite extraordinary and so far from the truth as to be bizarre in many cases.
And I think there's been a misunderstanding. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Cabinet Office. I think it's become too big. It's become a massive animal in the centre. Yeah. After all, it's only a department. But everything that needs doing is brought into that centre, and it's basically controlling everything else in government. And that's certainly the sort of view you get from outside. And I think in terms of the PR, I mean, the Isle of Man is the Isle of Man, you know, and I made this point in the election results meeting. I made this point that in the Isle of Man, people like to hear the ministers and the members talking about what they're doing and why they're doing it. They like to hear them. We don't need to be controlled in that way. And I do think that over control, there are times when you need briefing properly and you need to be clear, but in general terms, general politics, if you use that term, the freedom we all gave, which was, yeah, come on down, I'm in the office working, next half an hour I'll be free, I've got 20 minutes or whatever, and you go through it all. That seems to have all gone now. I don't know how true that is, but that's certainly what was being said.
One of the big benefits I always found by having a good, positive relationship with the media was that it's a two-way thing. Mm. It's not just the opportunity for ministers actually to explain the nuances of their various policies. But for me personally, I found it as a great benefit talking to journalists that they would give me an early warning, a heads up on problems which were coming down towards us, that we could actually anticipate and do something to respond to. I think what's happened is that the communication strategy that this government set up 5 years ago has actually built a barrier between government and the electors, the public. And I think built up a degree of resentment amongst the media that they haven't actually been as positive in promoting some of the stories that they might have been, or certainly would have been, 5 years ago.
And there's no doubt that that then had a spin-off effect in terms that the public don't have enough information where they can identify the minister. I always used to take the view, you know, people just say, oh, blooming questions in Tynwald or questions in Keys or being questioned by the press. And I used to take the view, but I've got all the benefits. I'm the minister answering it. Absolutely. I get the publicity because I know the knowledge. I can explain it. Mm. And that seems to have gone quite a lot. And I think, in fairness, you know, we're not as transparent as we were. The information isn't available to the public the same. The over-reliance on the government website for things is crazy. Mm. A lot of people still don't have access to the web. A lot of people don't use the web. But if you want to know about consultation now, you've got to go to the web hub. And, you know, you go into there and that's it. Local authorities, I've been to local authority meetings, and all that happens now is the clerk reads out all the website links and said, if you want to have a view on this, it's on this. There's no documents flying out anymore. Mm-hmm. Nobody really understands what's going on, and I think that's backfired.
And I do think now this new government is starting to take shape. Communications has got to be very much at the core of their initial consideration as to how they interact with the community for the next 5 years. There are going to be some really difficult decisions coming up in the next 5 years.
Absolutely.
It's vital that government explains its rationale behind whatever actions it takes so the public fully understand what's in the pipeline.
That's a really good way of moving on to the next topic. But just before we leave this one of the key messages that was coming out from a number of candidates, many of whom have been successful, is chief executives need to be held to account. So there needs to be some level of perhaps performance-related pay for what's going on. So I think whoever's devised the communications policy might be a little bit nervous if that is the way in which things develop in the next 5 years. You're listening to Alan Bell and Tony Brown. Two chief ministers here. What is the role of the chief minister, I suppose, would be the first thing?
Well, the chief minister is there to lead the Isle of Man's government and to lead the ministers to put together and formulate policies, strategies, how the budget works, whatever. I mean, it's that coordination, and the chief minister's role is also, in a way, or at least this is my view, is to lead in terms of how do we develop policy, you know. It's political. We're not talking about the administration of it. We're talking about purely the politics of it. If we don't get this right, it'll damage Manx politics. There's no doubt about that, because people will lose faith in it. And, you know, you often hear members saying things, and we've all done it at election time. When you get in, the reality is slightly different. But the powers are already there with the ministers, you know. The minister is the department. And I made the point last night. One advice I can give members is read the Council of Ministers Act, read the Government Departments Act of 1987, and read your standing orders and learn the budget. If you've got those things on board, life's a lot easier.
Yeah. The thing about the Isle of Man is, of course, and I hope it never changes, we don't have party politics. Mm. So there is no party leader that can actually step into that role of chief minister, as would happen, for example, in the United Kingdom, and the party leader would become prime minister.
I should say that later on the programme, I've got the two new Labour Party members, but...
well, you can have parties, but not necessarily in control.
I came into politics in the early days, very much a supporter of party politics through Meg Fannin. My views have changed over the years, just in the light of experience. But the responsibility of a chief minister now is to actually bring together a team. A chief minister isn't like a chief executive of a private company. We can't just advertise for the best talent to fill the certain roles.
Well, that's obvious, isn't it?
we've got to actually work with a pool of 33, I suppose, but certainly a pool of 24, which we have no ability to employ. Bring the best we can together to get people, you know, round pegs and round holes, and try and get the best out of them that way. Build a team which he can work with or she can work with, and then take the Isle of Man forward that way. But it's a tricky balancing act. It's not as straightforward as you might think.
And the whole process of getting to be chief minister, in a way, a lot of people say that if you want to be chief minister, you're probably not suited for the job. Tony, what was your thinking on that?
Oh, well, I certainly had no ambitions to be chief minister. As you'll know, I was a minister for 15 years and then I became speaker. And I was very happy being speaker. Circumstances overtook that. And no matter what in politics, if you care about the island that you're representing, you'll do what you think is necessary. And I was persuaded by members who spoke to me a lot after the first lot didn't come with a result, that they wanted me to stand, and I was successful, and I enjoyed my 5 years as chief minister. You know, there's no doubt about that. But it's a totally different role than that of being speaker.
I still remember actually the election for you to be chief minister, and I remember listening to the late great David Collister on Manx Radio saying, "Ah, yes, and the horse trading will have begun now." And I remember thinking after I'd come out from the meeting I had with you in advance of the election, Tony, if that's horse trading. Because effectively, you told people, this is what I stand for. If you want to vote for me, that would be great.
Yeah.
If you don't want to vote for me, that's equally fine.
Absolutely.
But I'm not promising anything other than this is what I stand for.
Yeah. And I think that's right.
And that's what a chief minister should be doing, quite honestly. I'm like Tony. I mean, I have had no ambition to be chief minister. I had 9 years as treasury minister. which I enjoyed enormously, which gave me actually a great oversight of most of what government does anyway. So from that point of view, I was quite happy to continue in that role. But, you know, elections throw up unexpected combinations of new members and alliances and the like. And after that election, it was quite clear what the new lineup of the Keys was going to be and what some of the problems that was going to develop. And as you probably remember, a good number of members approached me because of the experience I had in Treasury. Would you take Chief Minister? Absolutely. And at that point, I felt, yes, it's a responsibility really to do it. But it wasn't something I sought. But like Tony, it's a tough 5 years. Absolutely. But it was a very enjoyable Absolutely. 5 years
and of course,
in many ways.
One of the things that I regularly say whenever any wannabe MHK talks to me, that the first thing you have to do is elect a speaker. But probably the most important first thing you have to do is elect the Chief Minister. Yeah. And that is quite a big task. Mm. So we've just had a fairly inexperienced House of Keys, and they're now being replenished by 11 new members.
Yeah. Well, in fact, it's a real problem because if the Chief Minister, whoever it is, doesn't want to appoint any MLCs, which I didn't do, and I don't think you did, Alan, because that tends to be the trade now. The Chief Minister will have to look around at a new house. There's two people already not available, that's himself and the Speaker. He's then only got 22 members he can pick from, of which, is it 10 or 11 are new? So the task is going to be quite challenging. But we've been there before. It's really about the members' commitment to safeguard and improve the quality of life in the Isle of Man and to actually do things that make the island better. But that needs leading by the Chief Minister.
But it's actually more precarious than that in one respect. We've got, yes, a number of new members, but if you broaden that out, over two-thirds of the House of Keys now have 5 years or less experience, because we had a big intake, if you remember, in 5 years' time of new members. You haven't got any corporate memory left in the House of Keys at all, of the problems we've had to face over the years, the steps we've had to take to get to where we are today. And that is going to be a real problem. And the problem is you haven't got a long-established candidate as Chief Minister, someone who has that corporate memory himself. So I'm not saying it's the blind leading the blind, but there's an inexperienced, potentially an inexperienced Chief Minister leading an equally or more inexperienced House of Keys, and that's going to be a problem.
At the last election, obviously, I think we had 12 new members at the last election, and at the time there was some thinking that actually maybe this is an opportunity for a fairly radical change, a radical shift from where we've been to perhaps where we need to be. Maybe the system needed that kind of shake-up. So who knows, maybe, because you know, the public have assessed the quality of the candidates that they have. You know, I've been round all the constituencies with Manx Radio, and there are some excellent candidates who've got in. So maybe actually the lack of experience might actually result in a fresh approach.
I don't doubt that at all. And in a way, this is to be welcomed in some respects, because it really is the changing of the guard this time. Mm. You know, the old, our generation of politicians are now moving on. There's a whole new set coming in. But they are inexperienced, and that showed in the last election, where, frankly, the first 3 years of the last House, it was the most passive House of Keys I think I've ever come across. There was no discussion, no debate. There was no passion in the place, and that's what's missing from Manx politics at the moment.
And it is important, isn't it? You know, you need to motivate people. If you're going to motivate people, you have to be able to talk with from the heart as much as
you've
from
got
the head.
To believe in it yourself. You've got to have a vision in your own head, which you then can sell as strongly as you can to the member of the Keys and then to the island. It's no good saying, oh well, we can take 3 or 4 years to learn the ropes and then we'll be okay. There are so many problems facing the Isle of Man now. You need to be able to hit the ground running, and that's going to be a real challenge for whoever takes the reins in a couple of weeks.
And I think importantly, they need to actually step back from looking at themselves all the time. What have we got wrong? What have we got wrong? Why aren't we doing it right? Why aren't we? Put all your energy and resources into saying, how do we secure our island's future? How do we make sure we have the income we need? How do we make sure we have the jobs we need? How do we make sure we can, you know, fund the services that the island needs? And unless they concentrate on that, and yes, there's going to always be some nasal glazing, but if it gets too much, which I think it has a little bit in the last 5 years, it ends up stopping the real work because the real work isn't achieved.
And you've got politicians today have got, and chief ministers today have got to be prepared to take risks.
Absolutely.
Not every step you take, every policy you take is going to be copper bottom guaranteed to be a success. You have to accept there'll be an element of failure sometimes along the way. I think that one of the problems we've had over the last 5 years is politicians have been fearful of taking any radical steps which might actually not work out and rebound on them in the popularity.
And not just the politicians, because it's also officers, from senior officers who actually seem to take the view, well, that's a bit risky, let's wait and see. Whereas and actually, our competitors aren't.
Maybe going back to that point about performance-related pay, to a certain extent, you know, I don't blame the senior officers for not taking risks, because you know absolutely that... if anything goes wrong, they're going to be slaughtered in Tynwald.
But can I just clarify that? When we say the officers take risk, they take the risk with the backing of the politicians, the minister.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a calculated risk as against no risk. And if you do a calculated risk and you get it wrong, then the minister at least can explain to Tynwald and to the public what they tried to achieve, why they tried to do it, but unfortunately circumstances overtook it. People understand that. What they don't understand and what frustrates people is when they do nothing. And that's the problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Tony made the point earlier on, and it's something they should never forget. The minister is the department.
Absolutely.
And what civil servants in the main want, right across the board, are strong ministers that will give them guidance and leadership so that they have a very clear idea of what government policy is, and they will follow that. Where you have weak leadership in a department, weak ministers, or weak chief minister, we're probably all guilty of it from time to time, then officers are thrown back on their own abilities to make their own anticipated judgment of what the minister might want. But if you haven't got that strength of leadership in the first place, then you've got problems. And it's not fair in many cases just to turn around and blame the officers.
No.
At the root of all this is weak politicians giving leadership.
I'm going to put you both on the spot now. There is going to be a chief ministerial election in the very near future. There's two candidates that we know of, but both Alex Allenson and Alf Cannon have put their names forward. Mr. Watterson was on the radio this morning adamantly making clear that he had no intention of standing for chief minister unless the people of the House of Keys wished him to do so. There's three potential candidates there. Jane Poole Wilson's name has been mentioned, but obviously never actually served as a minister as yet.
I think there's one thing in this mix you need to look at, though. There's 10 women. Been elected this time. They are going to want senior posts in government. And when I say they, it sounds like some alien body that's come in. But there will be a strong demand, I think, from the floor of the House of Keys.
And I think
for
from
woman.
The public, I think so this is Jane, why they've been elected.
Jane may be denying it all now, but I think she would be a popular choice amongst quite a few of the members as an alternative to Alf, who has been Treasury and linked some of the decisions that past House has made. Alex Allerton's lost half his vote in Ramsey and is not as popular as he was. Is that a problem? Or there could be perhaps a woman candidate for Speaker instead. We haven't had a female Speaker. So I think that, you know, it's not quite as black and white as it might appear.
That's as close as I think we've ever come to getting a seasoned politician to nailing his colours to the mast. Tony, are you going to be as forthright?
No.
You're rascal.
I'm far more diplomatic. You know that. I think we can't ignore the mix of the House that's been elected. And to be blunt, neither Alan or I or you, who've been in there for a long time, can actually assess what they may or may not do. We just don't know. We don't know how many of them are friends and know each other. And if they're not, then as they get to know each other in the first few weeks of being in the legislative buildings, because they will talk to each other, what are they looking for, what do they hope for? And, of course, critically, what any potential chief minister states are his aims. Because if they're astray from their own, they're not going to support the chief minister, whoever he is. It's got to be something they believe in. And again, the mixture of what they put in their manifestos and what they expect to take the island forward. If they're not in there, you're in trouble.